Welcome into Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You just heard it right there. You can watch us on Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, all of those things. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you. It's all presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. And our special guests tonight, coming up in the second half of the show, former Predator Darcy Hordachuk, who is always full of personality. You know we're going to have a good conversation with him, and somebody that I'm sure played against Darcy back in the day, Dan Hynote, Predators assistant coach, is with us right now. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Darcy was part of that nightmare team that you guys used to have that we hated coming in to play, with Tutu and Hordachuk and all those animals that you guys had at one point.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously it was a different time, a different era in the league, but I think if you look at the identity of some of those teams, there are a lot of similarities to what you all have right now. I mean, somebody like Tanner Janot, that he's scoring goals, but he's not putting up with anything either. That seems like what you and Coach Hines and everybody has been trying to build.
Yeah, yeah. The way we talk in the coaches room is we think it's going to be cyclical. Like, we think it's going to trend its way back into the game because of guys like Tanner Janot and his ilk around the league. You know, this game was meant to be physical and it was meant to be violent. And that's kind of our style. That's our identity. And I think the league is slowly heading back that way.
Willie, we lost Willie. He froze up there for a second. We'll have to get him back. But let's talk about last night. You know, starting this road trip, and albeit it's a short one, but you all go into Seattle the first time there, take on the Kraken, a team that beat you earlier in the season. Obviously, a lot has changed with both clubs since then. But you know, one thing I noticed about them, they do have some fight in them. Gave you guys a fight, but you're able to pull away, win it 4-2. You have to be proud with the overall 60 minutes from your team last night.
Yeah. Yeah. We're happy with the result. You know, it's not always going to be pretty. And last night it was pretty messy, but through 82 games, you're going to have those from night to night. You got to figure out a way to win. And obviously with juice in the pipes, he gives you a chance every night, and he was great again last night. But yeah, they're a tough team to play against. They don't beat themselves. They're really good in their D zone. They like to play a possession game versus a North game, and that sometimes gives us headaches. So, you know, I was proud of the way the guys responded.
Dan, I understand it was not the most routine trip to Seattle for the first time out there. You had to stop and refuel. I guess that's happened from time to time for some longer trips, but obviously it's not anything that is a whole lot of fun. It added some extra hours, I guess.
Yeah, it's basically the equivalent of going to Sweden from New York is what it ended up being. And you get the time change. It's kind of one of the factors that you don't really take into consideration as part of the equation is when guys get tired is, you know, you're 2 hours difference. You got 7 hours on a plane, you know, you're right from that city to the next city, a different time zone. Like that, it takes a toll on the body. So, you know, there's times when the guys, you know, they give you everything they got, but sometimes that's a little depleted based on our travel.
You mentioned, you know, it's hard. It's almost like we've been spoiled in this market going back for several years, you know, all the way back to the era we started with, talking about a guy like Thomas Focun for so many years, and then you go on to Pekka Rinne, and now you've got UC Saros. But you take for granted what those guys do consistently over the long term. So many people maybe focus in on one playoff series or whether a guy's won a cup or not, but that every night effort that you get, UC Saros has given you that every night. You just can't take it for granted, even though it's easy to.
Yeah, no. And we're, you know, having played for or coached on other teams, everybody in our organization knows just how valuable that piece is and how lucky we are to have had Pekka, Bokun, and now Juice, because, you know, that's the most important position in hockey. And, you know, if you have consistency there, it allows your team to play a certain style and allows a certain comfort level. And you know, that's why you see the upper echelon teams, play in front of their starter, you know, a different way than they do in front of their backup at times. So, you know, we as an organization and we here currently as a team are very lucky to have juice in the pipes.
And last night was one of those games. You mentioned there were circumstances, you guys maybe not full throttle, especially early in the game. The game's a struggle. He kind of keeps you in there. Then you get another thing that you can't take for granted either. A guy that just makes a great play. Philip Forsberg goes coast to coast. He starts with the puck behind his net. What, give us your vantage point as he just took it all the way there and just made a play.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was where he ended up shooting from is a scoring chance only for a guy like him. You know, it's kind of outside your typical house, I guess you'd call it, for where the scoring zone is. But with the way he can shoot the puck, wherever he shoots the puck from is a potential scoring chance. And, you know, he picks the puck up. He's a special player, and he's one of those guys that can break open a game, you know, just on with a snap of his fingers, you know, and you kind of just – he's been so consistent at it this year. You kind of just wait for it in the game. It's like, well, when's he gonna do something special and get us on the board? And last night was no exception.
Dan, when you watch him, you know, you played many years in this league and now as a coach, when you watch him, I mean, do you just shake your head and go, it's not fair? It's not fair sometimes to see just some of the things he pulls off when he's on the ice.
Yeah. Yeah. The stuff he, you know, being around special players, you have to watch him all the time. And, you know, you see stuff in practice that you'll never see on TV that just makes you shake your head. But, you know, when he scored that goal last night, you know, the whole bench turns around, like looking at each other, like, Jesus, is that's it? Like you said, it isn't fair that he's able to do some of the things he's able to do, but thank God he's on our side.
What have you seen in your couple years here from him, just from a leadership standpoint? Because I feel like Philip takes a lot and puts a lot on his shoulders. But, you know, as we've watched him grow up, now you truly see a guy that, you know, whether he's got a letter on, you know, or not, he's a leader night in and night out.
Yeah. His effort's been very consistent this year. And, you know, that part of his leadership is showing up every night and playing in that style. And he can play a power forward game. And this year he's played it a ton. You know, last night, I can't remember who he blew up, but he blew up a guy in the neutral zone right in front of our bench. And our guys feed off that. You know, of course, you got Trennan and Boro and Janot, these guys, and Sis, they're going to hit Cunning. And, you know, that's part of their deal. But Forsberg doesn't necessarily have to be successful, but he knows that's part of our identity. It's part of his identity. And so when he does it, you know, that it has even a greater effect for the boys. So he was on last night. It was great.
Predators assistant coach Dan Hynote with us here on Smashville Live. And you talk about the guys that don't necessarily have to do that. A few weeks ago, we had Ellie Tolvanen on, and he talked about that's a part of the identity and something that he has picked up. And now it's fun. You know, it was not a part of his game before, you know, really Coach Hines got here, but now he seems to enjoy it. And you can tell with the type of season that he's having that he's embraced it.
Yeah, he's a physical force out there, which you don't necessarily – put that next to his name prior to this year. But when you watch him, when you watch the game film night in and night out, he does so much more than score. You know, it's great when he scores and that's a big factor to his game, but he does a lot more than that when he's not scoring. And so he's a very valuable piece, but a big part of his value is his physical play. You know, the other night, who were we playing? Boston. And I overheard one of their players were like, who the heck is this Tolvanen running around? You know, like you have your guys that you expect to run around. You know, you got the sheets in the locker room saying, watch out, this guy's a hitter, this guy's a hitter, this guy's a hitter. You know, I'm sure next to Tolvi, it says this guy's got a rocket for a shot, you know, can score in tight areas, you know, good two-way forward. But it probably didn't say hits like a truck next to his name before this year. Now, you know, if you watch film or if you play him against him enough, that should say hits like a truck next to his name. Cause he's for a smallish type, you know, body build, I guess you'd call it. He's a very strong hitter, and a very solid kid. So we love that part of his game. And I think it buys him space, you know, out on that ice. I think he's going to end up scoring more goals because of it over the course of his career.
Coach Dan Hynote is with us from the Nashville Predators. They play the Edmonton Oilers tomorrow night at 8 o'clock start. Dan, last year, these young guys, a lot of which we've already hit on, they started to come into their own. And this year, there was a lot of talk about the competitive transition, and you don't hear about it as much now, but you guys are still among the youngest teams in the league now. I'm curious from your standpoint, now that you've seen Trennan and Janot and Tolvanen, Luke Cunning still a very young player, some of these guys, how much smarter are they getting from last year to this year? When they made such a great impact on last year's season, they've now, it looks like they've taken it all collectively to another level.
Yeah, you know what? They've taken huge strides, and even guys like Carrier, Fabro, you know, that are younger, McCarron, you know, you see Smith is making an impact in the game. Tomasino, but from the guys that were on the team last year, you get the familiarity of the league, you understand what's expected, but also it's a grind. Your first year, even though you know our schedule wasn't a normal schedule last year, it's still a grind. And your bodies just aren't used to it. There's just no way to get used to it until you have to do it. And that's why you'll see young guys kind of fall off at around the, 60 to 70 game range. And that's where the veterans start to take over for the playoffs. But our guys went through that last year, so they know what to expect. They had a great training camp, and then it's just continued on. Their trajectory's been nothing but up since day one. So, we're really happy with how our young guys are progressing.
One more before we take our first break. We talked to John Hines a lot about how do you get to the next level? What's next for the team? And one of the things he mentions often is you're not sneaking up on teams anymore. People are starting to know about Tanner Jeannot and Trennan and exactly what's coming at them when you play the Predators. And there's something to that, isn't there, Dan? You played on some great Avalanche teams. You knew when you came to town with all those great players that, you were going to get the best from the other team. That's starting to happen a lot more, isn't it?
Yeah. You're not seeing backup goalies. You're not catching anyone by surprise. The teams know what to expect when we come in the building. And so you're going to get the other team's best, and I think that's why good teams always fare better in playoffs typically, because they've had to play at a high level all year long, because whether you're playing the second place team in the league or the last place team in the league, they don't want to get embarrassed, and they all certainly don't want to, get bullied out of a building. So you're going to get their most physical game, and you're also going to get their best game. So I think that's kind of the next part of this team's evolution, is learning to play with that pressure. It's easy to come and show up as the underdog and nobody knows who you are and try and make a name for yourself that way, and maybe catch a few teams by surprise. But it's a whole different animal when there are expectations, and maybe you're number one in the division or two in the division, and you have people that are trying to catch you now, and there's a different pressure that goes along with that, and a different swagger, and you can start to feel a little bit around the locker room that they're starting to understand that concept a little bit.
Up next, we'll talk more about why Coach Hinode is a player's coach. Obviously, played a long time in the league. As you listen to Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, assistant coach Dan Hinode of the Nashville Predators. It's all presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. And last week we had Michael McCarron on, and he was telling stories about you in practice that, even as a coach now, and you're not wearing the same gear as them, you're blocking shots, you're trying to show them what to do. I mean, you truly are a former player that's now a coach. I mean, you still got a lot of game. Why is that important for you to be out there in the mix with these guys to try and teach them what Coach Hines and everybody's wanting them to do?
Well, I think my old man was a coach. He was a football coach. And he was a fast pitch softball coach, but he coached everything. And he was a very charismatic guy. And so I learned a lot from watching the way he coached. And he always liked to coach by example, which in fast pitch softball is a little bit easier than football and hockey, but he would do it. He would kind of, okay, well, this is what I want, but let me show you how to do it. And once I show you how to do it, you can't use it as an excuse that I'm just a coach. And so, then fast forward to my West Point days and I was only there a brief amount of time, but what I took from those days were the sergeants, the officers are kind of a little bit away from the crew and they're, moving chess pieces, but the sergeants are they're in the trenches with you and they're showing you what to do. And they're actually, having to get their hands dirty. And I always came away really appreciating them as leaders because they're there doing the grunt work with you. And so I want to take a little bit of that. And I'm still, I'm still youngish as coaches go. And so I find it important that if I'm going to ask them to do these things, and in hockey, there are dirty jobs, right? There's the shot blocking and the physical stuff and all that stuff. And I feel like it's, you know, you ask that of players, but when you can also, you know, provide examples physically, it's a little bit easier for them to A, see it and then apply it, but also to swallow it.
Dan, I had a pleasure. I grew up in New York, not too far from West Point, and my dad took me to a couple football games there. It's such an amazing place. I can still picture it in my mind, even though I was still pretty young at the time. For people that maybe have never been, there's always a great connection, you know, that really all pro sports have, but I know our franchise has a great connection with, you know, Fort Campbell and a lot of the soldiers, the military. But for people that maybe are not familiar with what West Point is all about, what was that experience like for you just as a student?
Well, it's, you know, for me, it kind of changed the course of my life. I grew up old school. My dad was, you know, a stickler. My coaches were sticklers, you know, and by sticklers, that could mean a lot. I could mean a lot of things. And so they were hard on me, and that was the era. But so going to West Point was just kind of the next step for me. And it was part of how I already was. But basically, you know, it's one of the last, I'd say, you know, you can call it a school, academy, whatever you want to call it, one of the last places in the United States that still live in that system where it's really there. You know, as a freshman, you come in, you have, you know, you have duties, you can only say a certain amount of phrases, you have a certain amount of chews you have to fulfill. Like, there's all these little things. And basically what they're doing is they're breaking you down, all your bad habits, all your stuff, and then building you back up and trying to create officers. Because at the end of the day, as an officer, you have people under you whose lives depend on you. And so your attention to detail has to be second to none. And so all these little things that may come off as, you know, hazing or all these, you know, catchphrases really are saving lives. And so I always have a, you know, a huge spot in my heart for the military and law enforcement and the sacrifices that they make. But that place, I will always cherish because it gave me the attention to detail that allowed me to move, you know, the ball forward in my professional career. So it was great, but I walked a lot of hours in the process when I would get, while I was learning the process, you know, so it was great.
When you first saw it, what did you think? Like, what brought you there? Did you always kind of want to go there? Or were you recruited? Was that the best place for you to go play? Tell me about that recruiting process.
Well, I grew up in Minnesota, played Minnesota high school hockey, and, you know, was never the best on my team. And so I had good grades. I wanted to go Ivy League or somewhere out east, and I wanted to go to a good school. I also, we didn't have any money, so I didn't want my parents to have to pay for college. So it was kind of like, and I, at the end of the day, I wanted to go in the FBI. That was my end game. And so kind of West Point hit all that, you know, you get the military background, you got, it's great on the resume. You have to serve time. After, and then it's a, you know, not an easy springboard, but it is a springboard into the FBI after. And there was potential that I could start playing varsity hockey as a freshman there, because at that point, West Point was a half division three, half division one schedule, you know, so you weren't going there to play hockey. So it was kind of hit all the boxes for me.
When did things change for you and you realized that, you know, there could be an NHL career, and obviously which has led to coaching?
Probably not until I played my first game with the Avalanche. You know, I got drafted from there. It was a seventh round pick. It's not like, you know, you're guaranteed to make it at any round, but much less seven. It's funny because my dad grew up always saying I was fast, I could skate. And he was like, you're going to make it the NHL. He kept saying that to everybody. And it was embarrassing. And I wasn't, like I said, I was never the best player on any team I've played with. And so it was just kind of, I would just, you know, you couldn't argue with my dad. So I would just agree. But he basically manifested my career. So I'll always be appreciative of that. But I never fully probably believed it until I got the first call up. I think it was 99, Sean Podine was injured, who was a good friend of mine. And then I got the call to go up and play with them. And that was probably, until that moment, I probably hadn't really allowed myself to believe that it was, you know, going to happen. And certainly not to be a career. So, you know, I've been blessed with the opportunities that I've been given. And that was, you know, a big part of it was getting that lucky call after an injury.
So those teams in the early 2000s in Colorado, not bad, not a lot of talent. I mean, here you are, you mentioned your first call up. The next year, 2000, 2001, you guys are on this tremendous run and win the Stanley Cup. So what was that like as a young player?
Well, it was unbelievable, you know, and I was, the veterans were really like, having Ray Bourque on the team gives you the perspective of how lucky you are to be there. Even as a, you know, a rookie, you know, watching his storied career and him never having won, was like, okay, I might be a rookie and this might feel like this is going to happen every year because we have that kind of team, but here's a guy that's, you know, one of the best of all time and he's never won. So it gives you the perspective of, you know, this might be your first year and you're already at, you know, in the finals, but this might be the last time you get to the finals, you know, at the same, in the same breath. So it was great because, you know, those guys raised me, you know, Forsberg and Foote, and Sakic and Waugh, and, you know, they, and not just me, everybody, they raised everybody, you know, because A, they wanted to win, but they're also great people. So they took the effort, the time, and it was, somebody did it for them and they passed down all the traditions, all the, you know, here's how we do things here. And it's, you know, and it's the right way. And that's not necessarily the easy way, but certainly the right way. And, you know, when you grow up that way, when they raise you that way, you know, you have no choice. And because they're the best that maybe has ever played in their respective positions, and they're doing it the right way. So what choice do you have but to do it the right way? And so it was great because it just set up, like I said, the rest of my career and the rest of my life outside of hockey as well.
I can remember talking to you after you got hired as an assistant here in Nashville, and, you know, just kind of your view of the Predators, and we've seen what has happened since that time. You know, now obviously you got a great job, you're an assistant coach, but how much do you look ahead of what your career goals are as a coach now?
I don't look too far ahead. I mean, other than, you know, your next segment, you know, is yeah. Coach Hines has done a great service to me by kind of mentoring me and showing me the ropes, you know, as a head coach and mentoring me in that way. So, you know, again, it's more of a pipe dream that I'd love to be a head coach, maybe in the NHL someday. But in the meantime, I learned from him and Todd Richards and Dan Lambert. I learned from these guys every day, and these guys have been in the game for a long time, and they're brilliant people. Even, you know, our video coaches that don't get, you know, many accolades, they're the best in the business. So I'm surrounded by really, really good coaches, and I don't take it for granted. So I try and soak up as much of it as I can.
Well, Dan, just speaking of that, I know you guys, I'm sure, have spent a lot of the day game planning for tomorrow night. It's such a unique team to prepare for, the Oilers, at least in my mind. You have two special players like they have, and they're constructed all around what those guys could do, and they're capable of being so dominant. So when you play a unique team like that, what's unique about your game plan?
Well, I mean, you know, the key against any team is not to beat yourself, but with these guys, you know, feeding into their rush game, they're incredibly fast. You know, McDavid is the fastest that's ever played. And, you know, you give them one turnover at the blue line or one miracle play through the slot that hits a stick and they're gone. And that feeds their game, you know, so you have to try and keep them in the D zone as much as possible, which means you got to get over pucks. You got to possess, you have to, you know, you're going to have to outnumber them in the corner. You know, but maybe the run and gun game isn't going to be, you know, very successful against a team that lives off the run and gun game. So, you know, you gotta play dirty. These games are going to, you know, they're ugly and you want to make them ugly because they want a nice, pretty game where they could fly up and down the ice sheet and make plays. And we know that's their game. So we want to take that out of their hands a little bit.
Well, best of luck with it tomorrow. It's certainly going to be a fun one because of what they can do and what you all can do. But Dan, good to talk to you again. Thanks so much for spending some time with us tonight. We'll do it again soon.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. Good to see you.
Dan Hynote, assistant coach for the Nashville Predators, joining us here on Smashville Live. But don't go away. Former Predator Darcy Hordachuk on the other side will go down memory lane with him. It's all presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine, Chase McCabe, Willie Donick. Of course, we are a part of Darren Donick and Chase, weekdays 10 to 2 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and you can catch Willie on the Bally Sports side. It was weird not seeing you and Mace and Lindsay and the crew on last night, but how about Leah Hextall doing a fine job on the play-by-play on ESPN Plus?
Yeah, it's always interesting to see how a national broadcast is going to present the game. So we've enjoyed the coverage. Linda Cohn between the benches, yeah. That was a lot of fun. So they had some good stuff. I'll tell you who really stood out to me was Ryan Callahan, who's not that far removed from playing. Played, right, of course, for a long time for the Rangers and the Lightning. A real good, tough player. He I thought, had some really good stuff in intermissions. As well. What we look for, it's kind of funny. We were texting each other throughout the game. Of course, Hal has been sidelined, so the three of us were watching the game together in our own houses, but we're texting back and forth. And it kind of gets us excited when there's some things, some tidbits that it looks like they've picked up from our broadcast. And we appreciate it. If I ever were in that position, that's what I would be looking for, is, you know, what are some of the themes and the storylines that the announcers that watch them every night talk about. And, you know, yeah, they got the Herd in there.
Yeah.
You know, they were talking a lot, cool, about the Herd.
They had the nicknames,
you know, Leah broke it all down. Yeah. That was really good. And, you know, they talked about Tanner Jeannot and the uniqueness of his game compared to some of the other rookies. So it's nice to see that the national crews are starting to pick up on that. Cause I do still think that Tanner Jeannot, I think I saw this, and I don't know if it's an official thing or just an exercise that people do for fun, that, because it really doesn't mean anything till the end of the season. But I saw a story where the people that vote for the Calder Trophy, the Rookie of the Year, they did a midseason vote, and they just went right down the list of the three top scorers, and Tanner Jeannot was fourth on the list. And I was like, you know, because Dominic Moore did a really good job of talking about why you can't just look at the straight up points, even though Tanner, right, Jeannot has the most goals of any of those guys. And those other three players, we're talking about Zegras, Sider, and Raymond, the two guys on the Red Wings, and Trevor Zegras for the Ducks. Those guys are exciting young players. They're going to be awesome. And Tanner Jeannot is a different type of rookie. He took the long road to the NHL. He was undrafted, and he was a total unknown. These other three guys were hyped up first round picks, you know, bursting on the scene at 19, 20 years old. It's a very different perspective. But the value to each person's team, I think, has to go beyond how many points you have. And it's so easy to fall back on that as a voter. But Dominic Moore made a key point. The other three guys play a ton of power play time. If you play on the power, yeah, play, you're just going to get more points if you're worth your salt. Tanner Jeannot hardly ever plays on the power play, and he still has almost as many points. He plays a ton of minutes on the penalty kill, not as glamorous, but he's an outstanding penalty killer. He starts his shifts most often in the defensive zone, which makes it prohibitive to score a lot. He's playing against the other team's skilled players. And then that doesn't even take into account the physicality that he plays with, that everybody knows about, the hits, the fights, the intimidation factor, which is intangible. So I think you put it all together. Yeah. To me, he still is undersold as the Rookie of the Year. It's not going to be in analytics and all that stuff. You got to look closer to see what he does every night.
And I think he's just going to keep getting better and better and more skill, you know, as he goes on in his career. I mean, this, you know, I think when you see a player like him come on that is, you don't know much about him, the undrafted free agent, you immediately think, okay, is this a flash in the pan? And he's had, you know, a really good start to his career, but the league's going to figure him out, and then you'll never hear from him again. Or is he going to stick? And I think at this point, we've seen enough from him that everybody believes, yeah, he's going to stick. Like, he's going to make it in this league. And I thought what Coach Hinote said there was kind of interesting, of how, you know, the league's kind of coming back to, you know, maybe you're never going to see the amount of fighting that you saw back in the day, but it's definitely becoming a more physical league like it used to be. And so you have to have players like a Tanner Janot that can not only score goals and rack up the points, but has that physical part of his game. That kid is not afraid at all. And when you look at him, you may not think, okay, yeah, this is a fighter. This is a guy that you really got to watch out for. But he is, and he hits hard, and you can just tell that he's put that extra work in.
And then here is the next layer of it that also should not be overlooked. This particular Predators team, let's take one player in particular, because there's others you can say. But Roman Josi. Roman Josi, in years past, used to get run, as they say. People would take liberties. If he were right back there and you could get a shot at him, people had no second thought. If they could catch him, which not as always easy to do, they were going to target him. Now, think about it. On a nightly basis, it's not like a guy never gets hit. But it's a lot more few and far between the times where you just see the Predators get bullied. It doesn't happen anymore. So that allows Roman Josi to do his thing a lot more without, you know, worrying about how if he's going to get blindsided or run or whatever, you know, whatever liberty you want to define it as. And I think that is a major, major value of Tanner Janot and his other linemates. But when you're trying to build the case for the rookie of the year, all of that should be mentioned. But I don't know how deep some of the voters take it. It's so easy to just take a look at the points and say, hey, well, look at this highlight that Zegras had, and hey, Sider was the fourth pick in the draft or whatever, and say, okay, you know, he's first. He should win the, you know, I would like to see Tanner Janot get a long look in a lot of detail when it comes down to that.
Well, I mean,
it was encouraging about the national broadcast lights. Dominic Moore definitely was fine to do that. He was watching him closely.
They did their homework. You could tell that. Yeah. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you on Smashville Live. We hope to be joined by Darcy Hordachuk before we get out of here. Former Predators forward, but you know,
he could be wheeling and dealing. You know, Darcy, he likes to wheel and deal. He's always got stuff going on.
But one thing that's kind of fun to think about is you look at the different eras of this team, and a lot of comparisons have been made between their identity that they have now to some of those old Barry Trotz teams when they didn't have the most skilled player. They didn't even have a Philip Forsberg. They had a Paul Kariya at the end of his career that was still playing at a high level. We all know when they went for it in 06 and 07, getting Peter Forsberg at the time. But you had a lot of those scrappy type guys that, you know, fit in that era of hockey, but are more similar than to what you had with Peter Laviolette. I think about the team that went up against the Ducks in the conference championship game. And you used to use the phrase, the dark arts, that the Ducks were the masters of the dark arts. I would love to just, you know, play the fantasy game of seeing this current team, even though that Peter Laviolette team obviously won and moved on.
Yeah. But 2 years see this in a current, row. They beat that team 2 years in a row, which was incredible. Those two series, both of them were just knockdown drag out.
Can you imagine how physical it would be with this current makeup of the Preds team against the Dark Art Ducks?
Wow. That is really interesting to think about. And it's funny you mention that, because Elliot Friedman, who will be on our show again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And for those that may, you know, be in a different schedule, you know, you maybe work during the day, you don't hear our show very often, always go back. I think it's absolutely worth going back, listening to Elliot's interview with us every Thursday at 1. It's must listen to. He's got a podcast with Jeff Merrick. You know, they do a fantastic job. They had Ryan Getzlaff on as their guest on their podcast earlier this week or last week. They asked him about that series in particular. And he talked about what a tremendous competitive thing that was, you know. And here's a guy that they lost the series, right? He could have said, you know, we won a lot of other games, you know,
sure.
But he commended the Predators, and that was what was crazy about it, is those teams looked like they wanted to kill each other. You know, they just hated each other, but they competed. Did. Yeah. And that Ducks team was tough. And Ryan Getzlaff played on one that was very tough as well, that won the whole thing in 06-07, which I thought was the Predators' best team up to that point. That team, I thought, and you just referenced it, with Barry Trotz, they had the mix of the skilled guys up top, Kariya, Sullivan, Dumont, you know, guys like that. And then they had the grinders down low, 2-2-2 and Hordichuk and Scotty Nickel and those guys to Vern Fiddler, you know, those scrappy role players. I thought that that was a great team that just never had it aligned, unfortunately, when the postseason hit.
Well, they had, I think, signed Arnett at that point. So he was here, JP.
Yep.
You know, E-Rat, Fiddler.
Yeah, it's a deep team. Hamuse,
Hartnell. I mean, yeah.
And then you add Peter Forsberg at the stretch run. That team had all the ingredients, I thought, to go all the way.
Rattle off, you know, coming on early. But yeah, if you have those conversations about, all right, the best team they've ever had, I still would probably put that one, you know, just talent wise, top to bottom, probably their best one. But wasn't meant to be. He is Willie Donick. I am Chase McCabe. We'll come back. We'll preview tomorrow's game, talk a little bit more about this Edmonton team as you listen to Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you, two-thirds of Darren Donick and Chase. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, 10 to 2 weekdays. And, of course, Willie will be back on the call tomorrow on Bally Sports as the Predators are in Edmonton to take on the Oilers. We appreciate Dan Hynote, assistant coach, for joining us earlier. And we were just discussing this during the break, Willie, that, you know, obviously everybody knows Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, you know, two of the best players in the league, if not the two best players in the league. And they are both on the Edmonton Oilers. But you know, the one thing that the Oilers do strategy-wise is you may have them on the same line, you may not have them on the same line, and that is a difficult thing to combat when you're trying to beat them in Edmonton, because they also have the benefit of last change.
They do, and they normally will play on two different lines for a lot of the game, but when they need the push, all of a sudden you'll see them together, and then all of a sudden you look and you say, uh-oh.
I saw that last night when I was watching the end of the game against Vancouver after the Preds game was over. I mean, they did that. They were out there at the same time.
So for people that have not followed the Oilers closely, they were 16-5. Then they went 2-10-2, and they were in the doldrums. That's where all that exchange between Jim Matheson and Leon Draisaitl, nobody was in a good mood, and it just got ugly on that day. It went viral, all of that. But that was sort of their life. For a while, they just couldn't get out of the mud for several weeks. You know, I guess really when you get down to it, about a month and a half at least. But they have shown signs of life. I think this is sometimes the most difficult time to play a team like that, where you kind of know there's something better. You know, eventually they're going to come around. In their last two games, they won against Calgary. Very close game. They went down to the wire. They kind of struggled. Draisaitl got a big goal late in the third period, hockey night in Canada, and all of a sudden, you could tell the monkey was off their back a little bit. They were relieved. They finally had something positive to happen. Last night, they get down 2-0 to Vancouver, in Vancouver, and you're like, uh-oh, but then they come back, and they win the game in overtime. So they're coming in feeling good about things. They're excited to get to the rink. That's kind of a scary time to face the Oilers. And then on top of that, remember how far back you can think. There was a time where the Predators just flat out did not lose to the Oilers. They beat them. Yeah. I can't remember how many times in a row. Heck, 12, 13, 14. And UC too. Yeah. But the last few games, the Oilers have busted out against the Predators. And I told you this stat earlier in the show, and you couldn't believe it. The last six games that Leon Draisaitl has played against the Predators, he has 14 goals. 14 goals in six games, not 14 points, 14 goals. That's how dangerous he is. And he's starting to come around. He went through a tough December. So this will be a handful tomorrow. Now, what's exciting is in the first meeting where the Oilers scored five or six, I can't remember, they might get an empty net goal at the end. They played against Connor Ingram, who I thought played pretty admirably in that game. But UC Soros will be rested, ready to go tomorrow. What a great challenge. You know, it's Draisaitl and McDavid against Soros.
Yeah, and I mean, what you're talking about with Edmonton, I mean, the way the Pacific Division is laid out right now, is obviously you have Vegas that has a pretty sizable lead over Anaheim with 53 points, but Edmonton's only 7 points back of Anaheim for second. So, I mean, this is a very, very close race right now in that division. And obviously the Predators, you know, don't have a lot of room for error either. In the Central, is there, they sit second, 4 points back of Colorado, as Colorado has vaulted up as we all figured they would. But that's what makes this time of year fun.
And the Oilers, if you take a look, like all the Canadian teams, they have played less games. So they have the ability with games in hand to make up ground, even though the schedule, the downside of that is it's going to be a very compressed, busy schedule for them through February, March, April. So a hot streak is what they need. They're capable of doing it. Now, remember, too, when the Oilers, you know, you've got those two superstars, but this is what I hinted at with Dan Hynote. When you have two guys that make up that much of your salary cap, and you got to pay those guys, right? They're two of the, you know, ultra superstars in the league, but it doesn't leave you much error for the rest of your roster. So Ken Holland, number one, is up against the salary cap. There's not much he can do. And you got a hit on young players not making a lot of money, or bargain players that you pick up for a very low price. And they haven't gotten great goaltending on the whole. Mikko Koskinen's won the last couple, but he really had struggled prior to that. And so it handcuffs them a little bit. So there's not a lot of moves you can make. And so the depth is where you can exploit the Oilers some if you're on your game. And I thought Dan Hynote made a great point. I'm going to be thinking about this tomorrow. You can't do anything to beat yourself. Those guys, you could do everything right, and those guys still make a play and score a goal. You say, hey, I got to tip my hat. What are you going to do? That's greatness right there. That's all-time greatness. But you can't help them, right? So this thing about the Predators, they go into the penalty box a little too much right now, that is a recipe for disaster tomorrow. They're the number one power play in the league, the Oilers. And the Predators, as we know, they're aggressive. They get great hits. They go on the power play a lot. They have a great power play. But if there's one thing that they would like to cut down on, I think it's the minor penalties.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned just those two players and the skill of the team. I mean, this is, we've used that phrase, measuring stick game. I mean, that's exactly what this is, you know, for the Nashville Predators, of how do you match up against these high octane offenses, you know, like Draisaitl and McDavid have there in Edmonton, you know, because you're gonna have to see what that looks like later on down the line, because this is a team that right now they may be sixth in their division. They're not gonna stay there. They're going to make the playoffs. I feel pretty confident in that with Edmonton. So it's, you know, it may be late January, but this is where you really got to see how you match up against some of these teams that you could see down the road.
There's a lot of hockey left. There is a lot of hockey left. And you pointed this out, Chase, the Pacific Division, if you go on a good hot streak, you can still get into the two or three spot. I think ultimately Vegas, unless they have the wheels fall off with injuries, they're the best team in that division. Second,
no doubt.
Third, fourth is really, really second and third, which guarantees you being in the playoffs. That's kind of up for grabs. You got an overachieving, you know, young Ducks team. That's, and same thing with the Kings, right? They've got good young talent. They're a little bit ahead of where people thought they would be. And then you've got the Oilers, the Flames. You got a good battle going.
San Jose is in there, right?
I mean, San Jose is hanging in there. They've been sagging a little bit. They've played more games than the other teams. So they've got a little work to do here, and they're kind of on the verge of a rebuild, I think, as well. So you're right. I think it's very gettable for the Oilers to jump back in there. But the Central is a lot deeper when you get down to it. The Central has got more points. If you're, say, the Jets, who are in that mix of teams, or even the Stars right now, who are on fire. The Stars have ripped off how many in a row? Five in a row, I think.
Yeah.
You know, the Predators, the Blues, the Wild, and the Avs, they have banked a lot of points right now. They're going to be a little tougher to catch. It doesn't mean they're there, because as we know, you know, you got a half a season, a lot of things can happen, but it's much a steeper climb, I think, for the Jets to get back in. They're looking at wild card, whereas the Oilers can still get second and third in the division.
Yeah, because I don't know which one I trust the most, but Anaheim, Los Angeles, Calgary, I don't trust all three of them to sustain this. I probably trust Anaheim more than anybody just because they've done it all season long. But
interesting. See, still long. Elliot told us a different team. You remember who he told us in that mix?
I probably wasn't on.
You may not have been on. He likes the Flames. But I think it's a really intriguing mix of teams.
Sure.
Because Anaheim's got that young blood. You've still got a couple of veterans like Getzlaff and some of those great names that we talked about before. It's going to be a great race. It's going to be great. The West is deep. The East is eight teams. You can mark them down. They're almost in, as Seth Davis likes to say, Sharpie. on the Eastern side, you can almost put them in Sharpie right now. They're going to be the eight teams in the playoffs. So, West, different story.
Well, Willie, thanks so much for joining me tonight. Nice discussion with Dan Hynote, and then the second half of the show as well. You'll be back on with DMAC tomorrow and Derek Mason as well, starting at 10 o'clock, plus on the call. Tomorrow night is the Predators take on the Edmonton Oilers. That's going to do it for Smashville Live. My thanks to New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. Stick around. Penalty Box Radio, that's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.